From KCRW in Santa Monica and PRI, Public Radio International, this is To the Point.
State politics and the gender wars. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is To the Point from Public Radio International, a daily look at the issues Americans care about most. In several state legislatures, women say they're giving the men a taste of their own medicine when it comes to restrictions on abortion and contraception. One proposal requires that a doctor confirm that a man has a medical reason for taking Viagra and knows the side effects before he can get a prescription. Another declares it an act against children for men to waste their sperm. Supporters ask why anti-abortion laws don't make fathers equally accountable. We'll hear from them and from counterparts calling themselves pro-life. On Reporter's Notebook later on, a mixed verdict in a notorious case of bullying that led to a suicide. First, here's the news.
Support for To the Point comes from the members of KCRW and from the Public Radio International Program Fund.
Hello again, Warren Alney, back with To the Point. In several states, female legislators are striking back at efforts to limit abortion and contraception. We'll hear about proposals designed to call attention to women's rights and gender inequality. On Reporter's Notebook, the suicide of a college student who was secretly videotaped in a sexual encounter with another man made national headlines 2 years ago. Today, a jury returned a mixed verdict in the case of webcam spying and bias intimidation. First, this news update. Just 2 weeks after agreeing to limit its nuclear program in exchange for food from the United States, North Korea announced today it will launch a satellite this month to commemorate the 100th birthday of its founder, Kim Il-sung. The State Department calls that highly provocative and says America's food aid may be in jeopardy. Mike Chinoy at USC's U.S.-China Institute is author of Meltdown, the inside story of the North Korean nuclear crisis. Mike Chinoy, always good to have you on our program. The North Koreans say they're going to launch a satellite for space development and peaceful use. Why does the State Department find that provocative?
The State Department and others are troubled by this because the notion of the North Koreans having a communication satellite is very inconsistent with the whole nature of North Korea's infrastructure, which is so degraded that the idea of a communication satellite doesn't really make sense. More importantly, the launch vehicle is going to be a long-range rocket, which is really, in the view of many people, just a cloak for the North Koreans to conduct a test of a long-range missile. And while the North Koreans have not been hiding the fact that this was in the works and have been consistently saying that as a sovereign nation, North Korea has the right to launch satellites, as indeed it does, the signal that it's going to send to the United States is that it's a slap in the face just after this very significant diplomatic breakthrough. And I think it's going to be very hard politically for the Obama administration to move ahead with food aid or any other kinds of steps to engage North Korea if the launch goes ahead.
Why would the North Koreans do this?
It's hard to tell. The North Koreans there were North Korean officials in the States in the last couple of weeks for a series of Track 2 meetings in which the message seemed to be very clear that the new North Korean leadership, which was stable and in charge, was interested in improving relations with the United States. But at the same time, the North Koreans seemed to be making it clear to the United States that any new, better relationship has to be based on the point of departure of North Korea being acknowledged as a country with nuclear weapons and a country with a missile capability. So part of it is the North Koreans saying, this is just the kind of country we are, deal with it. There's also some speculation that in North Korea, as in the United States, there are policy differences and there are people who are pushing for engagement with the United States, and there are people, particularly in the military, which is the dominant institution in North Korea, who are dubious about this and want to flex their muscles. And so this may be a case of the military prevailing over the engagers, even though the reaction is likely to be very negative in the United States.
What does this tell us about the new leader, who is, of course, the grandson of Kim Il-sung, the founder of the country?
It raises some interesting questions. I don't think there's any doubt that the situation is stable. I think the idea that North Korea might be in danger of collapsing after this transition is unfounded. But there are clearly differing perspectives, and the military is very strong. But the North Korean message in all of these Track 2 meetings was, we have a new leadership in place. It's a leadership that didn't fight the Korean War. We have no interest in being enemies of the United States, but that does not mean that we are going to give up our nuclear capability or our other military capabilities. And so I think the North Koreans are going to portray this as a test of American sincerity and being willing to deal with North Korea as it is, rather than trying to coerce North Korea into being a weaker country. But particularly in an election year, I think it's going to be very hard politically for the Obama administration to move ahead. And that's very unfortunate, because this recent deal was, in fact, very significant. The North Koreans were prepared to let in inspectors from the International Atomic Energy Agency to look at their new uranium facility. They were prepared to have a moratorium on missile and nuclear tests, explicit missile and nuclear tests. But this could all now be in jeopardy if the North Korean launch goes ahead. So overall, I think it's very bad news.
Doesn't the U.S. also look bad in the eyes of the rest of the world if it withholds food aid to a country that needs it?
The American position has been very complicated on this, because the official line is that the U.S. doesn't link food aid to anything else. The reality is that the deal that Washington and Pyongyang negotiated explicitly involves food aid in return for North Korean concessions on the nuclear and missile front. And I think the North Koreans are going to say that if Washington doesn't go ahead with food aid, that they're not going to go ahead with their side of the bargain. It's a very tricky issue, because if the North Koreans do stage this test and the Obama administration simply moves ahead, it will open itself up for criticism that yet again the North they've been betrayed by the North Koreans. There is this narrative that the North Koreans do deals and then renege on them, and this is going to be interpreted in that light, I think, in Washington.
Okay. Once again, the launch is scheduled for this middle of this month. We'll see whether it happens. And Mike Chinoy, as always, author of Meltdown, the inside story of the North Korean nuclear crisis. Good to have you on our program.
Thanks very much for having me.
In a moment, state politics and the gender wars on To the Point.
KCRW thanks Factiva from Dow Jones for its use of Factiva.com.
Werman Olney back with To the Point. The National Organization for Women calls it wonderfully humorous, but Ohio's Democratic State Senator Nina Turner says she is as serious as a heart attack. She also says it's time to fight fire with fire. She's introduced legislation to limit a man's ability to get a prescription for erectile dysfunction without meeting certain conditions. We're going to talk with Senator Turner in just a minute. First, let me introduce Lynn Watchman. He is state representative in the 75th House District of Ohio. That's in the northwest part of the country, and he's sponsor of HB 125, known as the Heartbeat Bill. It would deny abortion to a pregnant woman whose fetus has a detectable heartbeat. Nina Turner's bill is described as a response to that. Lynn Watchman, you first. Thanks very much for joining our program.
Thank you. It's good to be with you. Good afternoon.
First of all, explain the Heartbeat Bill. What does it do, and why do we need it?
The Heartbeat Bill would protect the unborn babies from the time that a heartbeat is detectable in that unborn baby, typically 7 to 8 weeks from the time of pregnancy occurring.
Now, I understand that in some cases this is before a woman even knows she's pregnant?
That could be. The goal in my legislative career, one of my goals is protect the unborn babies from abortion, from death, and this bill clearly is a major effort and initiative to do that.
What do you say to Nina Turner's response bill and the idea that men should have to know more about medications such as Viagra for limiting the ability to get an erection?
Well, as I've told the media on several occasions, her bill and my bill is like comparing apples and bananas, and that's supposed to be a little bit funny, and some people find it that way. But on a serious note, for anyone, and I don't know if Senator Turner is aware of this, of course, whenever a doctor or an APN or a physician assistant, at least here in Ohio, writes a prescription for any prescriptive drug, the doctor slash and pharmacist are certainly able and are supposed to, at least upon the suspension of that prescription, there's available both from the pharmacist questions that you can ask the pharmacist about any side effects, any issues that drug may give you, including Viagra and other drugs like that. And also, with every prescriptive authority, there's also a long explanation typically given with that drug that would give you side effects, possible questions to ask your pharmacist, and so on and so forth. So maybe Senator Turner's not aware of this, but we have many laws on the books, and indeed the pharmaceutical industry goes a long way on their own to assure that patients who receive their medicines are fully aware of any negative effects that they may have on their life.
Lynn Washman again, Republican member of the lower house of the Ohio legislature. Nina Turner is now with us. She's Ohio state senator. Her district includes parts of Cleveland, and she is the author of Senate Bill 307, the legislation that is designed, she says, to protect men's sexual health. Senator Turner, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Explain how this protects men's sexual health and why that's needed.
Well, it is certainly needed. We want to take the extra step, and I heard my colleague mention that I might not be aware. I'm fully aware. But what my bill does is give an extra layer of protection to men to absolutely ensure that they know what the possible harmful side effects are in a very concentrated way, making sure that not only medically from a medical doctor, but also that they are required to see a sex therapist as well, because it's so important that we determine whether or not it is psychological or is it physical. And some of that is mentioned in the FDA recommendations that men determine, that doctors help men to determine what is possibly called causing those side effects. So I'm making sure that we show men love and we protect them in the same way that representatives like my colleague and other male policymakers across this country have been so preoccupied with a woman's reproductive health. It is only fair that we balance the scales, because far too long, as female policymakers, we have abdicated our responsibility to look out for men's reproductive health. So that's what Senate Bill 307 does. We're just looking out for men's reproductive health.
Mr. Washman, what do you say to that?
Well, I appreciate the love forward to men from Senator Turner and others who are promoting the bill and other bills like it across the nation. But my bill, in addition to loving the women, is also loving the babies inside of that woman. All of us who have studied the abortion issue are fully aware of the terrible consequences that many, many women have after abortions of terrible emotional problems and things. And also, abortion is not a real safe procedure done in many clinics. And so I appreciate the love that Senator Turner is showing the men of Ohio. But our love is much further than towards caring about women. It's also caring about that unborn baby. You know, it's interesting to note, at least in Ohio, but generally nationwide, Planned Parenthood has set itself up in heavily concentrated minority areas, particularly large cities, where it performs up to 300% more abortions on black women than on Caucasian women's. So I find it interesting, although I guess if you don't have any value of life for the unborn, you don't care. But I find it interesting that, as with the welfare cases and things like that, public policy being promoted by some in this country is abhorrently horrible towards the black community and also the, in many cases, the Hispanic community. So I find it very unfortunate that those who claim to be serving and helping many of that population, in reality, their public policy is doing great harm to them.
Now, Senator Turner, we're getting away from the point here, but how do you respond to what Mr. Watchman said?
Well, you know, I would have to agree with my colleague, Representative Watchman. It disturbs me that in the state of Ohio, when it comes to making sure that black and brown and poor white children are educated, that in our last biennium budget, the Republican majority decided that it was more important to cut billions of dollars from K-12 education, the very vehicle that poor children, be they white, black, or brown, use as a vehicle to take them out of poverty. I am so shocked that one who would care about, claim to care about life, didn't care enough about the lives that are here in terms of lunch programs and dealing with the children that are here today. So to me, this legislation, this heartbeat bill, reeks of hypocrisy. It is nothing more than a bill to take women back into the dark ages. You know, we have a short memory in this country, and we forget the times that women actually lost their lives trying to get back alley abortions. But who cares about the woman? And Representative Watchman's bill, a woman could not even get an abortion in instances of incest or rape, some of the most vile things that could happen to women, and only if she was on her deathbed, then maybe. So what I believe in is that women are not just vessels to carry. They are intelligent, they are competent, and they know how to make the right decisions for their bodies.
Mr. Watchman, what about rape and incest and the concerns that we've heard?
Again, my belief is that every baby is worth protecting. Those cases are extremely rare, and I know they always point those out. And but I want to correct Senator Turner. She knows full well that the cuts in education came from Obama, who funded states like Ohio with a lot of public education money and then cut it all out. So the cuts in public education in Ohio were directly a result of Obama coming up with short-term, one-time funding for public education to support his teachers' unions, and what was a ploy for re-election and, of Democrats in Congress. So, Senator Turner, you know, and I know, that the cuts made were from Obama and federal money that was cut and not by Republicans in Ohio.
Before we get a response to that, Mr. Watchman, what about the allegation that by not including cases of incest and rape, you're really putting more value on the unborn child than you are on the living woman?
Well, first of all, in Ohio, we've had this debate, and again, many people are not aware of this. Every hospital in Ohio has rape prevention, that if a woman is raped or if a person is has incest against them. Our hospitals in Ohio across the state are fully capable and have great services available to prevent that pregnancy from taking place. So there are many safeguards in place. And in fact, I've been very involved
to prevent this pregnancy?
Right, right.
I thought you wanted to save the baby.
No, to prevent the pregnancy. Just what I said.
I say. Every
hospital in Ohio has, as part of their mission and part of their responsibilities, to make sure that rape victims receive proper care, and part of that would include that there is not a pregnancy to take place.
So that's not an abortion.
This would be immediate care after rape or incest.
Okay.
There are a lot of safeguards in place to assure that women do receive proper care in a case of a tragic situation. And in fact, I've been part of the leadership in that in Ohio, in my career here in Ohio, to help make sure that hospitals have that responsibility.
All right. Senator Turner, quickly, if you can, respond on both cases, the education cuts and the protection for people with rape and incest.
Yes, I want to deal with the latter part. That is absolutely not true. As a matter of fact, my colleague and I in the House have introduced a bill called the CARE Act, the Compassionate Assistance for Rape Emergencies, because that is not true that every hospital in the state of Ohio deals with that. What my bill would would do is to make it mandatory for every single hospital in the state of Ohio to let women know of their options in the cases of rape. One option would be to take that, to take the pill that would not abort. It can only stop a pregnancy before it happens. And then the other is to deal with sexually transmitted diseases. So since Representative Watchman has affirmed that he supports that, I am hoping that he will co-sponsor that bill or sign up on that bill with Representative Nikki Antonio, and I have a companion piece in the Senate. As to education, President Obama did not vote in support of House Bill 153, which made the cuts to higher education and K-12 education, but Representative Watchman, my colleague, did. The state has the primary duty to make sure that kids are educated. We have abdicated our responsibility since 1999 with the DeRoff case, when the Ohio Supreme Court affirmed that the way we fund education in Ohio is unconstitutional. And from 1999 to now, the General Assembly and previous governors have not answered the Supreme Court's ruling. So again, this is nothing more than hypocrisy. It's treating women like second-class citizens, and it is obvious that women don't count in this equation, and that women are so fragile and so feeble-minded that they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do in terms of their best interests, that they need men to tell them, or they need government to legislate. Let me tell you something. Women should not need a permission slip from government to do what is in their own best interest.
I want to thank you both for being on our program. That's all the time we have. I know both of you need to leave. I might very quickly ask Mr. Watchman if you can give me a one-word answer. Will you, in fact, co-author the bill of Senator Turner?
We have heard many hearings on this bill and other bills like it over the years. And again, I chair the Health Committee, have off and on for many years. And Senator Turner is simply wrong.
Okay. All right. You obviously have a disagreement about that then. And I'm sorry, once again, we need to move on. And I know you do as well. Lynn Watchman, again, state representative in Ohio. Nina Turner, state senator. Thank you both for being on our program. There are other legislators around the country in other states that are also fighting fire with fire, to use a phrase attributed to Senator Turner. She didn't say it today. One of them is Constance Johnson, who is an Oklahoma state senator representing District 48. She's also the Black Caucus Chair and Secretary of the Southern National Black Caucus. She has proposed something called the Spilled Semen Amendment to her state's personhood bill. Senator Johnson, thank you very much for being on our program.
Thank you very much for having me.
What is the personhood bill, and what is the semen amendment, Spilled Semen Amendment?
The personhood bill would place the rights, grant the rights of personhood to an embryo. And the Spilled Semen Amendment, simply in the same light that Senator Turner is trying to draw attention to the duplicity of our approaches, it would focus on the role of the man in the reproductive process and ensure that not only is an embryo a sacred piece, but that the sperm are as well, and that any time a man spills semen anywhere other than in a woman's vagina, he could be deemed as violating this proposal.
How would you enforce it?
Well, how will you enforce personhood? I think the whole idea that we're all talking about here is how ludicrous and absurd these proposals are, and how they are trending that way even more so nowadays. And, you know, women are just at the point where we're coming up with alternative language that simply points out how ludicrous this is.
So you think then that you're conceding that the Spilled Semen Amendment is as ludicrous as you say the Personhood Amendment is?
It's ludicrous, and surely I've heard that it was offensive, and it mirrors my offense at the personhood language and all of these bills that seek to limit women's choices when it comes to their own bodies.
What's going on in other states? We really don't have time for another question. Let me hold off until we have a very brief break, and then we'll come back and continue this conversation with State Senator Johnson from Oklahoma and from other guests as well. Later on our Reporter's Notebook segment, we'll talk about today's verdict in the notorious case of webcam spying in New Jersey and the intimidation of a gay college student who committed suicide. Back in a moment with To the Point from PRI.
Subscribe to the To The Point podcast at kcrw.com or on the podcast page at iTunes. You can also find To The Point on KCRW's smartphone apps, now for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry.
We're on Only Back with To The Point. Today on our program, we're talking about responses by female state legislators around the country to bills that have been introduced to limit access to abortion and to contraception. And we're talking now with Oklahoma State Senator Constance Johnson about the bill that she has, or the amendment, I should say, that she has proposed to the called the to the personhood bill, the bill that would make every embryo a person, and it's called the Spilled Semen Amendment. Senator Johnson, I take it that there are other proposals in other states of a similar kind, in Delaware, in Georgia, in Illinois, in Missouri, in Ohio, and in Virginia as well. Have you all coordinated in this effort?
No, we haven't, and I find that interesting because all of us are saying the same thing at the same time that Congress is holding hearings about contraceptives that don't include women, at the same time that the president is making the case for coverage of contraceptives by employers, including the Catholic Church. I think it's just an issue whose time has come, and you find out that there are women all across this country who are purely just fed up with the trends of the past few years.
Do you think that the Spilled Semen Amendment will kill the personhood bill? You don't expect to get it passed, do you?
The truth is the bill passed without the amendment. As the Republican majority, they did have the votes to bypass my amendment. But again, I think it was just about making the case, making the point that the duplicity of these proposals is no longer going to be tolerated. We're not going to stand silently and just let this continue to happen.
State Senator Constance Johnson from Oklahoma. Joshua Trevino is Vice President for Communications at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a free market think tank in Austin. He's also a co-founder of RedState.com. That's a widely read conservative news blog. Good to have you back on our program.
Thanks for having me back.
What do you say to what we're hearing here today from Constance Johnson and from Senator Turner in Ohio, that women are simply fed up with what they refer to as the duplicity of the proposals to limit access to abortion and contraception?
Yeah, what you're seeing here is a series of comedy acts by the losing side in the abortion fight. As recently as April 2009, when Gallup would take national polls, it would see a majority of Americans not describing themselves as pro-life. They described themselves as pro-choice. Now, that summer, polling changed. And in May of 2009, Gallup revealed that the American public, for the first time, described itself, a majority, as pro-life. So what you're seeing here is the losing side in this argument, trying to strike back in any way they can.
What about the merits of what they are saying, namely that the kinds of legislations we're seeing coming from Republicans and other conservatives are all aimed at women and none at men?
Well, last time I checked, it took two people to make a new human life. And so it's very difficult for me and apparently for most Americans to see legislation aimed at protecting children of both sexes as being inherently anti-woman. One of the rights enumerated in the Declaration of Independence is the right to life, and legislation pursuant to that is well within the American tradition.
Let me introduce Jim Wilson. He's a state senator for another district in Oklahoma in the northeastern part of the state. Earlier this year, he introduced an amendment to Oklahoma's state personhood bill requiring that a man who has impregnated a woman provide for her from the moment of conception. Senator Wilson, good to have you on our program.
Well, thank you for having me.
What do you say to what we just heard from Joshua Trevino, that what they're really concerned about here is protection of the child and that both women and men are responsible for that?
Well, excuse me. I think we're dumping it all on the women, but I don't believe anybody in the legislature really cares about abortion. I think they've turned it into a political device. I really find it difficult to believe otherwise.
What do you mean, a political device for what?
Well, it's a kind of a hammer that if you can get somebody on a bad vote or on a vote that they think is bad, they can solicit people in the community or in your district and say, gosh, you're anti-life. You voted for an abortion bill. And by definition, it's an abortion bill, but it may not even be an abortion bill.
Explain that.
Well, we had a bill last year that basically, it's the one I call, you got to hurry up and get an abortion before you cost an insurance company money. And what it was a late-term abortion bill, but it said after week 19, you can no longer, it's against the law to get an abortion. But the only sonogram that the insurance company pays for that is week 18, 19, or 20. You don't even know how old the fetus is at that point until you've had the sonogram. You don't know if you have a medical malady until you've had the sonogram. And then right away, you might be at the end within hours or even past the point of terminating a pregnancy where you've got a malady where the fetus may not live when it's born. So, but you may have a situation where you'd want to go to an expert, a surgeon, and see if he could do fetal surgery, if he could do something for that fetus. But what the bill says is you don't have time to do that. Now, 38 people out of 48 voted for that bill. And to me, that's just backwards. They're saying we don't care about life as much as we care about a political statement or protecting the insurance company or protecting the business from losing that employer's labor while they're pursuing a remedy for this pregnancy with problems.
Let me go back to Joshua Trevino of redstate.com. How do you respond to that, this really isn't what it appears to be?
Well, it's actually unclear to me how it's not what it appears to be. It appears to be fairly straightforward that voters and a plurality, if not a majority of voters at this point, care about protecting the life of the unborn. They do describe themselves as pro-life, and they behave accordingly. And if it is within that community, I think that's all for the better.
Senator Wilson, explain in a little more detail, if you will, how this amounts to a hypocrisy, how it appears to be one thing when, in fact, it's something else. And I take it you're saying that this is a way of finding ways to accomplish something quite different from protecting the life of unborn children.
For instance, we had another bill last year that said that you had to follow the FDA guidelines when you took RU486, which is where the bulk of the abortions come from anymore. And the truth is the American OBGYN college actually has changed those recommendations. And that happens. That's not uncommon. 20% of all pharmaceuticals are prescribed differently than the label says, and the FDA allows that. So basically the only purpose for that bill was to reach out and punish women, because the only result is they're going to be more nauseated after taking the pill as the FDA prescribes than they are as the American College of OBGYN prescribes. So the only purpose to run that bill is to have a political vehicle to say somebody voted against this bill because it obviously didn't serve a purpose.
So it's a political vehicle to be able then to criticize politicians. With what ultimate aim in mind?
Well, the only aim in politics is getting reelected. I mean, that's all any of us care about is the next election. We don't care about abortion. We don't care about open carry. We don't care about these social issues. They're out there to ensure that one party or the other can make points and perhaps get the power of the majority. We had another bill that was going to outlaw embryonic research. And the state chamber of commerce said, wait a second, we've got a research facility here. We don't want that to happen. And so they came down on the Republican majority and said, you just don't need to hear this bill. So right away, instead of having all this passion involved with saving these embryonic lives, right away they decided, well, gosh, we just won't hear the bill or we won't deal with the bill. So it wasn't a pro-life measure. It was a pro-business decision. And I think it was a right decision. The point was, if they were passionate about it and believed in what they were doing, they wouldn't have backed away from it.
So, Joshua Trevino, is this more complicated than it sounds, and are there motivations in addition to those that you have expressed and that Representative Washerman from Ohio expressed?
Yes, I feel like I'm hearing Captain Renault walk into Rick's Cafe American for the first time and shocked to find gambling going on in this establishment. Look, it's a state legislature. It's politics. It's political. People have cross currents and cross motives. But the underlying truth is that you do have, again, national pro-life majorities voting in pro-life measures. And, I can only repeat what I've said before, which is that if the debate is taking place within what's most pro-life, that's all for the good. And that means that our side has won the fight.
Let me go back to Senator Johnson, also of Oklahoma. How do you respond to Mr. Trevino's statement? He's made it several times now that you're on the losing side when it comes to abortion.
You know, if that's the case, I'm waiting for this year's election. Women in Oklahoma and across this country are angry, and that's Republican and Democratic women and men. And so, you know, he gave the Gallup poll as the source for the latest figures. I think that's getting ready to swing. I think that's the pendulum swinger at this point. That is going to be the deal breaker of this election.
And Senator Wilson, it's my understanding you feel that women are, I think you said this earlier, that women are in fact being dumped on, as you put it. What about the proposals to put similar restrictions on men when they want to get Viagra or other kinds of medications for erectile dysfunction? Does it make sense to pass those, or are they, do you think, just a response of a political sort of rhetorical nature?
They're a political response, and rightfully so. We should. People don't pay attention to what's happening politically until it's already happened, until it affects their lives. And this is a way of using levity to get to the point and bring people along. I have there's a professor out in Maryland that contacted me, and he's got a study that shows that people who want to own guns or carry guns openly are the same subset of people that are more likely to get cancer, prostate and rectal cancer, and therefore we should pursue that. We should have them do some sort of a rectal exam before they get an open carry permit. And he has the data to show it, that the same subset of people. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that bring this to light. Now, I think it's doing some good because even in Oklahoma, and we're probably the reddest state there is, no offense to Texas, but the people are back. We're getting a backlash against this personhood bill. So much so, in fact, that when we had the heartbeat bill up this week, that the author decided to completely neuter it so that it no longer became mandatory that somebody have a heartbeat or a Doppler test, but that it was optional. You could just say to the woman, do you want this test or not? And if she says no, then they go on like they've always done. The bottom line there was they put a lot of editorial comments in statute talking about mental health and so on for people who have abortions. And if you look at the data, it's no different than the mental health problems with postpartum depression. So, but anyway, the point is the bill got neutered. My thought is it got neutered because they were getting a backlash on the personhood bill. The personhood bill just went too far.
Joshua Trevino, are you concerned, as our other guests are saying, that the pendulum might be swinging back in their direction?
Yes and no. Yes, in as much as they are able to successfully redefine the debate as not a debate over the protection of human life, but as a debate over patent absurdities that nobody except for them are contending. For example, that semen constitutes a human person, which absolutely no reasonable person believes. So I am worried about that. I do think the pro-life community's response to it and to this effort, which is likely some sort of a coordinated effort nationally, has been inadequate. But on the actual debate of the protection of the unborn, I'm not that worried about it. It's been going in the right direction for a long time, and I think the American people are going to continue to come down on the right side of that one. So we'll see how it plays out.
Constance Johnson, back to you. Senator Johnson, you said earlier you have not been in contact with other legislators. You don't think this is a national movement?
Well, no, we're going to start a national movement. We've communicated with Senator Turner, and I know the legislator in Georgia, and he keeps saying that this is a debate over human life and the life of the unborn, when in fact the debate is really about the women and their rights to choose. And why are we trying to place more importance on someone who has, why is someone who has no meat in the game trying to control the lives of the women who do have meat in the game?
Mr. Trevino, can you understand that concern, given that most of the legislation and the Guttmacher Institute says that in 2011 there were 1,100 reproductive health and rights provisions introduced in the United States as opposed to 950 the year before and even fewer the year before that? All of them seem to be aimed more at women than they are at men. Will you concede that? Mr. Trevino?
Oh, pardon me. I thought you were addressing one of the other
panelists.
No. My apologies. I was being respectful, and turned out I was denying myself time. Listen, no, I don't agree with that, actually. Aimed at women versus aimed at men. I think this is a very, very spurious distinction to make. And look, the senator just said something that I think was frankly astonishing, that that fathers of children don't have what she called meat in the game. And that's really an amazing statement to make. You know, two people make a child, traditionally, at least as one normally understands it, and both should have responsibility for that child. And so it's really astonishing to see this denial of reality come out on the other side.
Ms. Senator Johnson, is that what you meant?
No, we're talking about control versus responsibility. The woman is the only one who carries the baby.
So in that sense, that's why you use that phrase.
Yes, and women are the ones who are having to endure situations and make difficult decisions that lead to the need for an abortion. And like Senator Turner said, oftentimes it's to terminate a pregnancy that came about as a result of rape or incest.
And you're saying, Mr. Trevino, that men ought to be held equally responsible?
Of course, absolutely. I mean, that's what I think any reasonable person would say. And again, I just can only repeat that I'm astonished that we appear to be operating in the world, at least in the senator's construct, where fathers and men don't play that role and don't have that responsibility. If they're not doing that to an adequate extent, then I would suggest the focus of policy ought to be, instead of enabling women to terminate the pregnancy, making men face up to their responsibilities. That's something we can all get behind.
Senator Johnson, what about that?
We're talking about men's accountability with regard to the pregnancy. And for policymakers to believe that they have the power to control and exert this power to control women's lives is what we find unacceptable, especially when we're only talking about one half of the equation all the time. So for him to continue to say that I'm trying to act like men and women have nothing to do with it equally, that is the point. Men and women are players in the game, and why men think they should be the ones to only control what women do is what the problem is.
We're going to leave it at that. Senator Constance Johnson in Oklahoma. Thanks also to Jim Wilson, another senator in Oklahoma, Joshua Trevino with RedState.com and the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and our earlier guests from Ohio, Nina Turner, state senator, and Lynn Washman, state representative. Thank you all very much for being with our program today. Tyler Clementi was a freshman at Rutgers University when he killed himself by jumping off the George Washington Bridge. He discovered that his roommate spied on him and videotaped his sexual encounter with another man. A month later, President Obama released a videotaped message condemning the incident as bullying of the worst kind. The roommate was prosecuted and today received a mixed verdict. We'll be back in a moment with that on To the Point.
Share your comments about today's show at kcrw.com/to the point or join the conversation on our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at @to the point_KCRW.
Warman Olney back with Reporter's Notebook on To the Point. The roommate who spied on the late Tyler Clementi was Durham Ravi, who faced 15 charges, including bias, intimidation, and invasion of privacy. Today, the jury found him guilty of invasion of privacy, but not guilty of bias, intimidation. Paul Callan is a former New York City prosecutor. He's also a criminal defense attorney and a CNN legal contributor. It's good to have you on our program, Paul Callan. Thanks for joining us.
Nice being with you, Ron. Warren.
What do you say to this verdict? Is this what was expected? Is it something unusual? Where do you put it?
Well, first I want to put it in context in terms of there's been some reporting on the verdict that I think has been inaccurate, which suggested that there was a not guilty finding on bias intimidation.
Oh.
And the reason for that, Warren, is the jury, when they read the verdict, said not guilty a number of times on bias intimidation counts. But the reason for that was this is a 15-count indictment, and what the judge did was on each count, he submitted to the jury multiple theories of guilt. And he, for instance, on one of them, there would be four subcategories. And if you said guilty on any one of the four, that resulted in a guilty finding. So in fact, although when they were reading their verdict out and they were saying not guilty to bias intimidation repeatedly, on every count they found him guilty of at least one subcategory. Bottom line, he was found guilty of everything. He's facing 10 years in prison for invasion of privacy, bias intimidation, hindering prosecution, and attempting to obstruct justice.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. So it isn't a mixed verdict then, as I have described it previously on this program.
No, it's not. It's really a sweeping victory for the prosecution. I mean, you could say the defense can come in and say, well, he could have been found guilty factually of every subcategory, and he wasn't of a few, but in the end, he's looking at the maximum sentence. So it really is a sweeping victory for the prosecutors.
Is it an unusual victory?
It's a highly unusual victory because New Jersey has this invasion of privacy law, which is the strictest law in the country, and it's really an unusual kind of law. It says basically that if you publicly broadcast video pictures of people engaged in intimate acts, you can be found criminally responsible. Now, traditionally in America, you could sue somebody civilly for invasion of privacy. Yeah, you know, we see this a lot of times with these sex tapes that celebrities get tied up with, and you see civil suits that result in that, money damages. But New Jersey said you do it, and it's a criminal offense, 5 years in prison if you do it. And so the claim here is that Ravi broadcast a sexually intimate moment between his roommate Tyler Clementi and another man who's only been identified by the initials MB using a webcam. New Jersey then has another provision of law, which, by the way, a lot of states have, bias intimidation, which basically says if the underlying crime is a hate crime, then you can double the sentence. And the jury then looked at this fact pattern and said, in their opinion, this had been done to humiliate a gay person, and it was a demonstration of anti-gay bias. So that would lead to doubling the sentence in the case.
And that means 10 years instead of 5.
That means 10 years instead of 5, maximum sentence. Now, that's not to say the judge will actually give 10 years, but he could if he wanted to.
This is in the state of New Jersey. Do you think it'll have any impact in other states?
I think it will have an important impact across the nation because we are in this technological revolution in America. We have a lot of young people in this country who sort of live their lives very publicly, posting items of video and photographs and on Facebook and Twitter and a number of other social networking sites. Sometimes those things are done to bully or to humiliate other people. And traditionally, that has not been criminal conduct. New Jersey has passed this law that, in essence, criminalizes it. And I think this case sends a message out that if you try to publicly humiliate someone using the internet, using technology, there is a price to be paid, a very severe price to be paid. You're looking at many years in prison. And that's a message that's never been sent, to my knowledge, to young people in particular in America about how they use the internet. So I think this is a game-changing, very, very important case about social media in America.
Paul Callan, once again, a former New York City prosecutor, down a defense attorney, also a CNN legal contributor. I hope you can stay a moment more. I want to talk to Shane Windemeyer, who is executive director of Campus Pride. That's an organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender advocates on college campuses. Shane Windemeyer, good to have you on our program.
Good afternoon.
What's your reaction to the verdict and the way it's now been characterized by Mr. Callan?
Well, I think it's very accurate, and I appreciate the accuracy in how he described it. There's been a lot of confusion about the verdict. Ultimately, Campus Pride feels that justice has been served. We were less concerned about the verdict than we are about the future of college campuses and the future of privacy among young adults. This case had many troubling things that brought up around kind of heterosexual privilege and how easy it is for a young person today to think that gay people have an easy time coming out.
you know, Tyler obviously was going through a lot coming out, and his roommate took advantage of that, whether knowingly or unknowingly. He would not have broadcast or shared Tyler kissing a girl. This was all about him kissing another guy. And because of technology, that chain of bias was evident through Twitter posts and other things that the court was able to share through the trial. You know, our concern is that colleges learn from this and create safe learning environments for future Tylers and students that are currently on campus. You know, 1 in 4 encounter harassment around their LGBT identity.
Given now that there are gay people on television, they are much more visible. Is it surprising that young people in particular might think it's easier than it is for them to come out?
Well, I don't think it's surprising, but what I would call that is heterosexual privilege, where a straight person, you know, sees Ellen dancing on television every afternoon and, you know, thinks that it's okay for a, you know, a 16-year-old or a 20-year-old to come out to their friends and their family, and nothing can be further from the truth, and I think Ellen would even say that. But I think there is a perception, and reality TV just kind of furthers this notion that it's easy to be gay today, and it's not easy. I mean, in 2010, when Tyler passed away, we lost at least 6 other gay youth that we knew of due to suicide because of harassment, because of how people treated them because they were gay. So this is a larger societal issue. We still don't have equality in marriage or in workplace protections for gay people across this country. So as long as you have inequality, it's going to impact young people who are gay, lesbian, bi, and transgender.
Shane Windmeyer again with Campus Pride. Back to Paul Callan with our CNN legal contributor. Do you think that there will be interest in legislation after this decision around the country, or is it something that people will turn their backs on?
It's going to be a controversial verdict for a number of reasons, and I think a lot of state legislatures will look at it. Some will say we need a law like this. Others may say New Jersey's gone really overboard here. And let me just articulate the flip side, the opponents of this law, what they would say. What opponents would say is that this is criminalizing adolescent stupidity, that this young man Ravi, who roomed with Tyler Clementi, made the kind of mistake that probably 25, 30 years ago was routinely made, playing a joke on a roommate, and that now he's going to prison for it. Are we criminalizing people who are just learning how to live with other people? Isn't college a time when you learn about people of other religions and races and sexual orientations and get to know that we're all the same under our skin?
Okay.
Or are we going to put kids in prison when they, you know, make a mistake and do something stupid like Ravi did?
Okay.
So I think there's a mixed view of this verdict. A lot of people think this verdict is a big mistake.
All right. We will see what happens next. Thanks to you both for being on our program. The producers of To the Point are Francis Anderton, Christine Bordahl, Katie Cooper, Anna Scott, and Caitlin Schamberg. Our technical director, Mike Newport, managing producer Sonia Geis. I'm Warman Olney. Join us again for To the Point, produced live and podcast as a co-production of KCRW Santa Monica and Public Radio International.
PRI, Public Radio International.
Hi, I'm Warren Olney. On To the Point, 2/3 of the Electoral College votes needed to win the White House are in states with voter ID and other restrictions on ballot access. Do they discriminate against minorities who mostly vote Democratic? Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.